This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program. Welcome to this special one-hour edition of Radioactive Magazine, and what makes tonight's show special is the new voices we are showcasing on tonight's program. Our lead segment by KKFI volunteer Brooke Palmer is a report from this year's Truce Festival held last Saturday. We think you will enjoy and be inspired by Brooke's creative reporting on this perennial community gathering that has worked so hard for so many years to help erase the perceived color line that has long plagued Truce Avenue. Next up will be an interview by KKFI volunteer Connie Mitchell. Connie interviews Hillary Shields of Indivisible KC, and their conversation will focus on what activity we can take as concerned citizens that will have the most impact on our elected representatives. Our third segment is a conversation between Daniel Kamer and Dennis Gilley about the comparable virtues of capitalism versus socialism. But first, a couple of news items. First of all, this is the season for rallies, of course. The Heartland Coalition to Prevent Gun Violence, Moms Demand Action, and Grandparents Against Gun Violence are holding a rally on Friday, June the 2nd at 5 p.m. at Mill Creek Park on the corner of J.C. Nichols Parkway and 47th Street. Supporters are asked to wear orange to show their support for reasonable gun control reform. And in other community news, the following interview with Winston Apple talks about an important event that's going to happen this Sunday. Okay, Winston Apple's an old friend of KKFI. He usually comes around and plays some of his music about social justice, but these days he's been doing some political organizing around some important issues, and he's going to tell us about an event that's coming up this weekend. So, Winston, just say howdy to everybody and tell these folks what I'm talking about.
We are going to have a presence at the Celebration at the Station event at Union Station on Sunday. We'll be there. Volunteers from Government by the People will be there with seven petitions for different ballot proposals. Four of them address the problems with our election process so that we elect more genuinely democratic governments. We've got one that addresses both jobs at a decent wage and the climate crisis. It's a renewable energy project, a New Deal-type jobs program that we've nicknamed the Green New Deal. We also have a public option for health insurance, a market-oriented, revenue-neutral health insurance cooperative that would be operated by the state and give people in Missouri a truly affordable option for health insurance. And we have one initiative that says any laws passed through the initiative process cannot be repealed or amended by the legislature without those changes also being approved by the voters. In the past, there have been some good things passed by the voters that just get tossed out or amended into irrelevance almost immediately. But of all of these seven, Bill, I have to tell you, by far the most powerful is to replace our winner-take-all with single-member districts system for electing members of the Missouri General Assembly, and we have a different version of that that does the same thing for Missouri's eight representatives to the U.S. House of Representatives. And proportional representation is truly the solution to nearly everything, possibly everything, that's wrong with our elections. It's not a new or untested system. It's been in place in 94 countries around the world for some time now. 85 of those countries have an ordered party list system like the one that we're proposing here in Missouri. I can tell you that when we get this on the ballot next year and it passes, Missouri will be the envy of the country when they see how our elections go. The voters will have many, many more choices in the primary election. And in the general election, once you've elected a party's ordered list in the primary, then in the general election you vote for a party rather than an individual candidate, unless you're voting for a independent candidate. So what happens with that is, since you're talking about a party, you're talking about its platform, you're talking about its agenda, you're talking about what each party is proposing to do to address the problems we face as a state and as a nation. And that is very different than the mudslinging contest filled with attack ads that pass for elections right now.
Okay, so you said there's seven initiatives at all, that being the most important one. There's two initiatives that I know of. I don't know if these are part of the seven or not. That's so you tell me. There's one that graduates the minimum wage up to, I think, about $12 or $13. And then there's the one to put a vote on right to work on the ballot. Are both of those or either of those on the seven initiatives you're talking about?
No, and in fact, I support both of those. There's also another one out there called Clean Missouri that does several things by amending one article of the Missouri Constitution. And we support all of those, and we're happy to work with those people. We're inviting them to gather signatures at our events and hoping to have the opportunity to gather signatures at some of theirs. They're good things, and I don't want to demean them in any way, but these four that change our elect, we don't have to fight the government anymore. If we elect a truly representative government, and we don't have that right now, you can tell that something's wrong when so many people, literally representing a majority of the voters, feel like they have to be constantly marching, rallying, writing emails, phoning their Congress members, trying to get them to not do what they're about to do, and begging them to do something they're not going to do. And that is a broken system. I will mention, Bill, that we won't have near enough time to go into detail with a 10-minute talk, but people who are interested, all this information is up on our website, which is very simply governmentbythepeople.org. At that website, people can actually download physical copies of the petition, all seven of them, along with instructions on circulating them. We've been working on some videos, and we anticipate our YouTube channel going live tomorrow or Friday.
Okay, so I want you to give that website one more time, but before that, tell us again what's going on Sunday and where that's at.
Sunday is the big event, celebration at the station, down at Union Station. The event space opens at 3. They'll have various activities up until about 8 o'clock. When the symphony will be performing and they have a big fireworks display, we're going to create some fireworks of our own with these proposals to actually change the way we elect our governments. And the website, again, is simply governmentbythepeople.org.
Winston, thanks for all you do, buddy.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about it.
Was my husband on guitar and me, along with my three backup singers, performing on stage at the 2014 Troost Festival. By then, I had been a Hyde Park resident for 6 years, as well as a regular Troost Festival patron. I was such a fan of the event, in fact, that I wrote the song you just heard, specifically for and about the annual event. A free, family-friendly street gathering where residents, businesses, worshipers, and visitors at and around this diverse urban thoroughfare come together one day each spring for a celebration of friendship, the arts, creativity, integration, and community building. As such, the festival's threefold mission, which is to recognize and celebrate the diverse creative energies of Troost Avenue, to change the Troost image to a place of meeting from one of division and fear, and to prompt residents of the community to join in lifelong learning, is dear to my heart. Having grown up attending the Kansas City Performing Arts Magnet Schools, which in the 1980s and early 90s was a pivotal part of the city's desegregation effort through education. I became aware at a young age just how much energy and creative output comes from integrated activities. In an environment that nurtured diversity and respect among children of various racial and socioeconomic backgrounds, I learned not only about the challenges our city and all cities across America face regarding justice, equality, and race relations, but also about the enlightenment that comes when diverse peoples work together to rise to these challenges and, at times, overcome them. After living in other parts of the country for several years, my husband and I moved back to Kansas City and settled in a neighborhood that I proudly describe as being located in the heart of the city, just one block south of Linwood Avenue and two blocks Troost Avenue. I quickly immersed myself in the vibrant urban community, one of diverse racial and ethnic makeup and mixed income, ranging from entrepreneurs, business employees, artists, and students, to community activists, spiritual leaders, and the homeless. Despite settling within this mecca of creative diversity, it didn't take long before I began to learn that I live on the, quote, good side of Troost, and those who live on the, quote, bad side of Troost should be avoided. Of course I was aware of Kansas City's history of racial segregation, of Troost functioning in many ways as a racial dividing line. What I find most disheartening, though, is that to this day people still perceive this avenue as one that separates good from bad, or safe from unsafe. Emboldened to try to help change that perception, I found that the annual Troost Festival, which aims to do just that, is one of the area's best opportunities to share the spirit of the region, the spirit of creative synergy, learning, and integration that exists and thrives when we tap into it. To learn about the history of Troost Festival, one need only visit the website of the Troost Village Community Association. At troostvillage.org, you can read about the, quote, Troost Folks, a collective described on the website as a loose collaboration of individuals in the Midtown area of Kansas City, Missouri, who are engaged in dialogue around 10 areas of concern: art, community, communications, education, environment, health, justice, resources, science, and spirituality. The first Troost Festival took place in 2004. Born from the Race Relations Action Team, which sprung from various KC forums sponsored by Consensus, Ray Peterson and Fred Culver, working with St. Mary of Egypt Orthodox Church and Reconciliation Services, determined that closing off a segment of Troost and having a party would be the best way to transform Troost from a dividing line to a gathering place. According to the website, everyone and anyone is welcome to join and take part in group meetings, discussions, and activities. Anyone with interest to get involved is free to attend meetings Thursday nights at 31st and Troost at 7:30 p.m. at the Reconciliation Services Center. To learn more about the organization of this favored festival, I will now walk to the corner of 31st and Linwood and join this year's event, which is just about to get started on this semi-rainy Saturday, May 20th. When I arrived at the event, I immediately wanted to immerse myself in the sights and sounds and various activities happening around me. But before allowing myself the freedom to roam, I wanted to first find and speak with Ray Peterson, the original organizer of the Troost Festival. I found her at the table selling beautiful 2017 Troost Fest t-shirts containing the locally famous mural by artist Alexander Austin on the brick building at 31st and Troost. Here, the two of us had a wonderful recorded conversation about the event. Unfortunately, the high wind that blew mercilessly throughout the day rendered all of my recorded interviews inaudible. So I've decided to paraphrase the conversations I had throughout the day, doing my best to describe some highlights of the Troost Festival experience from my home office. You may notice that there's some jazz music playing in the background as I speak right now, And these are the sounds of Eric Grover, a local musician I met at the Truce Festival when I purchased one of his CDs entitled The Next Chapter for $5 from his table. So when I met with Peterson, I asked her how the festival has evolved from 2004 to now, and she explained that, quote, "People know about it now. They know who we are." When asked why this community needs an annual Truce Festival, Ray aptly explained that the event is a way for neighbors to celebrate neighbors, and also for all performers and attendees to be free to be ourselves and showcase who we are to one another, building on these relationships every year to create something bigger and better, as evidenced by the number of hugs she received throughout the day. She said it's hard to describe the vibe of the event from an organization standpoint, but said there is a level of positive chaos and self-organizing that takes place, and that every year it's easier to talk to people about the event because they know about it and they come back. Like myself, I've been attending the event since my first year living in Hyde Park neighborhood in 2008. Peterson went on to explain that performers do not have to pay to participate, and most everyone is welcome. Vendors must donate 10% to the festival, but there are no rules for where or how to set up, adding, quote, "Just come and pick a spot to set up, and you can bring your own chairs or we'll provide chairs if needed." For those who want to get involved for next year's event, she did caution that the location of the Thursday night meetings is changing and that the Truce Village can be contacted through the website trucevillage.org for information about each weekly Thursday night meeting until the new regular location is ready. After speaking with Peterson, I stood for a moment just to observe my surroundings and the layout of the festival, which so clearly combines entertainment and the arts with community activism and community building. At one end of the block, near the corner of Linwood and Troost, you'll find lines of tables and tents representing various community organizations, services, and entrepreneurs from the area, eager not only to share what they're doing for the community, but also as eager to hear about your own involvement and interest in growing healthy relationships and interactions in our city. Among these stations, you'll find individual artists, musicians, craft sellers, and even those putting out $1 for any object resale items just to make a living. At the other end of the block was the main stage at 31st and Troost, emceed by KKFI's own Mike Murphy, where various musicians, bands, dancers, and other performers provided live entertainment throughout the entire day and evening for eager audiences, many of whom may not have the privilege of enjoying live entertainment in a free, welcoming, and safe environment apart from this annual event. Here I watched families, small children, couples, and various individuals of all ages set in folding chairs or on the metro bus stop benches, dancing, singing along, and waving their fists in solidarity. But before settling down in front of the main stage, I spent my first 2 hours of the day walking through various tables and vendors, speaking with as many folk as possible. Weaving among the patrons, I first bumped into performer Freddie O'Malley and his squirrel Netsy, a hand puppet that looked so realistic that he both delighted and possibly frightened small children who were both fascinated and eager to pet the creature nestled into his arm. So this is your squirrel puppet. What is your squirrel's name?
Netsy.
Netsy. Tell me a little bit about Netsy.
Well, him and I like to go out and talk to people, and he doesn't say a whole lot except to me. He whispers in my ear, and I'll translate, because most people can't understand squirrel.
Next, I chatted with Jimmy McCauley, who sells Jimmy Mac's Louisiana sausages. He was selling sausages practically every time I walked by. He even cut a slice right off the grill and gave me a sample, which was mouth-watering. Jimmy Mac says he's worked at the Truce Fest for about 6 years, selling strictly Louisiana smoked sausages, alligator, andouille, green onion, jalapeno, etc. And I'm telling you, that piece that he gave me was delicious. All right, you said your name is Jimmy McCauley?
Yes, in Acme, I'm known as Jimmy Mac.
Okay.
And talking of KKFI, when KKFI moved up on 39th and Main, they had a backyard party. and I was the only vendor there.
Really?
Yes, Bill Claus. I called and talked to him, and I wound up being the only vendor there. And I listened to KKFI. That's my station. Larry J. I've been in Kansas City 30 years, and I don't know how long I've listened to KKFI. I can't get around it. Mental Southern voice, Southern soul, classic, and all of that stuff.
Everything.
The blues, jazz.
Next, I strolled over to the table where Mothers United was sitting. At this organization, I met Linda handing out literature about the seven stages of grief after the loss of a loved one. This organization is composed of mothers and grandmothers uniting against violence and homicides that remove their children. Linda is a woman who lost her own grandson before he was age 2, and she said he would be 14 today. Linda said, quote, "Mothers and grandmothers who lost our kids through homicide go to vigils and support other families that went through the same thing that we're going through, and that these same women have been through grief counseling and speak and let other families know how they feel." From there, I waltzed over to the KC Public Library Blueford branch table, where the children's librarian and outreach librarian were handing out free books to the children. Most of these were multicultural books with an emphasis on African and African-American authors and topics. Next, I visited the table of father and daughter Craig and Stacy of SC Native Crafts, where they were selling their hand-beaded earrings and jewelry, along with some painted rocks. Craig, the father, was showcasing his hand-stitched and beaded earrings and other remnants. These are only some of the people in the booths that I visited. There are so many others, I can't highlight all of them. But just to name a few, there were local Green Party and Republican Party tables. There were animal pelts on display from the Discovery Center. There were a couple representatives from Paul Messner's puppets, and there was even voter registration. In addition, there were various organizers walking around, approaching anyone who would like to speak with them. There was PeaceWorks KC, who are looking for local visual artists for the upcoming UnPlaza Art Fair, which will be held the same weekend in September as the Plaza Art Fair at Southmoreland Park. For any visual artists interested in this event, you should contact peaceworkskc.org and apply by July 14th. I also met two different individuals, Dan and Jane, who approached me with literature and information about an upcoming Memorial Day walk/ride/die-in, a walk from the old Bannister Road nuclear weapons plant to the new plant on behalf of workers who have died from exposure to toxins. In addition to the various tables and visitors I visited, there were also representatives from Charlotte Street Foundation, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, KC Urban Yoga, Operation Breakthrough, Uzazi Village, Veterans Community Project, and so many more. After visiting several of the tables and vendors, I made my way back to the main stage. Luckily for me, the wind had died down by this part of the day, so I was actually able to record several small clips of various performers, which we will play for you at the end of this piece. Here I sat, at times moving to the front of the stage to join others in dance, for hours of nonstop entertainment, which ranged from the children of Operation Breakthrough Choir, the multicultural dancers and performers of Grupo Asia Capiera, playing hand drums and other organic instruments while small children and adults performed dance moves that simulated person-to-person combat. Here I also watched Ms. Starr sing a cappella while waving a long pink ribbon through the air. I was also enchanted by Ms. Nicole providing a high-energy rap performance that covered themes of the challenges and self-empowerment of a single mother with a less-than-easy life, followed by more hip-hop with a positive message by Matt Diamond. I also watched worship tunes being sung by Aisha Lovejoy, who was so entranced with her spiritual message through song that she was moved to tears during her performance. And next we will play for you the sounds of several of our performances that I was able to record at the event.
special surprise guest. He goes by Shep. So give Shep a warm hand.
Yeah. For the last couple months, I've been dealing with depression. My G say count your blessings. You got favor, why you stressing? Since the beginning of time, heard about sacrifice. All I got is the seconds. I can't let you in my life. It don't stop. The sands of time be falling from the top. It don't stop. With the higher keep it started on the block. It don't stop. Bust it open, give me what you got. It don't stop. The hourglass is ticking, run it up and don't stop.
Dealing with consequences
on decisions that I made. Even when I'm getting paid, gave my lawyer everything. Aiming out for 12 months, now I'm right back in the slump. Wake up with scandalous intentions, trying to get some Benjamins. You can't win.
I washed away all my sins and set the spirit free. I look back. Having always done right, but still in goodness and mercy, follow me every day of my life.
Dancing and singing along with the very talented soul and R&B group Newport, who had an amazing horn solo, by the way. Following all of this was a strong performance by a heavier rock band from St. Joseph, Missouri, a band called Stone Blind, whose heavy guitar and strong vocals reminded me of a mix between Black Sabbath and our recently departed grunge vocalist Chris Cornell of Soundgarden and Audioslave. The crowd didn't miss a beat with this striking transition in musical genres, and continued to pump their fists and tap their heads in rhythm with the band, whose lead vocalist proclaimed how excited his band was to perform in our city for such a diverse population of people. And even when they finished their set at 7 p.m. in the evening, Mike Murphy kept the crowd engaged between acts, observing the awesomeness of the fact that there were yet more performances to come, and commenting that, quote, "This is what it makes it worthwhile. Everybody coming together like this. I'm Mike Murphy from KKFI, and we'll be here with you until we close this thing down." It was a couple hours later when we closed this thing down. And once again, I can say I am proud enlightened, and excited to have joined yet another Truce Festival event. And I will be back next year. Thank you for taking this trip with me. This is Brooke Palmer, a volunteer from KKFI.
As we explore local efforts to become more environmentally aware and involved, one of the most important things we can do is continue to hold lawmakers accountable for actions that affect our Earth. The controversy around the appointment of Scott Pruitt to lead the Environmental Protection Agency and the subsequent executive actions that could dismantle the previous administration's Clean Power Plan have been headline news. So, what's next with the environment, and how can you stay up on new developments? Here to discuss that with us is Hillary Shields of Indivisible Kansas City, a grassroots, multipartisan organization dedicated to resisting the Trump agenda and promoting a progressive agenda. Hi, Hillary.
Hi, Ken.
So tell us, how can people keep track of what the government's doing?
Well, that's kind of a complicated question. The government is a very large, multifaceted thing. So are we talking about the federal government, the state government, your local government? Because each of those are going to have a little bit of a different answer.
Okay.
At the federal level, I think a great way to track what's going on is to pick one or two issues that are really important to you, such as the environment or healthcare, and find organizations that really keep track of those issues. So if the environment's an issue that you really care about, maybe follow the Sierra Club, sign up for their newsletter, follow them on Facebook and Twitter, and they'll let you know about upcoming legislation and things that really need to be focused on at this point in time. For me, one of my big issues that I care about is healthcare. Mm-hmm. And so I follow the Indivisible Guide, the national organization, because they're focused a lot on the AHCA right now and tracking its progress in Congress. So at the federal level, there's a lot of organizations that are kind of doing that work for you already.
Mm-hmm. It does seem harder to find information on bills going through the legislature in Jefferson City. I mean, we read about it a little bit in the local paper, but...
So at the state level, it depends on the issue. There are some groups that are working really hard to track things like reproductive rights. Planned Parenthood does a great job of tracking what's going on with that at the state level. But at Indivisible KC, we found that there wasn't anyone that was really tracking all of the progressive issues on the Missouri state level or doing the kind of weekly calls to action that we want to do for our members. So we've started doing it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So some of our members, they will follow the legislative calendar for the Missouri State House and State Senate. They're in contact with different organizations, again, like I said, groups like Planned Parenthood or the Sierra Club, to kind of let us know what's going on. So we're looking at lots of different sources, and then we put together a weekly call to action. We send out Missouri Mondays, where every Monday we're telling you about an issue that's happening right now in the state of Missouri and what you can do to impact it. Because those federal issues are incredibly important, and talking to your senator and your representative about those federal issues, which I think we'll probably talk a little bit more about later, is a great way to handle them. But at the state level, you can have an incredible impact.
Mm-hmm.
Your state representative, your state senator represent fewer people than, of course, your federal level senator and representative do. And so when a state representative gets 5 phone calls or 5 emails, it can make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we've seen this. Our group, you actually went with me on a visit to Jefferson City, and we talked to my state representative, Gary Cross, about the charter school bill. And we told him how upset we were about what it would do to funding for schools in cities like Lee's Summit and how we love our public schools. 4 of us talked to him for about 15 minutes, and the next day he voted no on that.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw in that moment just how much impact you can have when you focus on those state issues.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody's really concerned about what's going on in the state of Missouri, I'd recommend they follow Indivisible KC, because we're kind of at the forefront of tracking those issues and letting people know what they should be calling about this week to have the biggest impact.
Yeah, and I guess it's statewide as well. There's always the Missouri Department of Natural Resources where you can get some information, Missouri State Parks.
Mm-hmm.
They have websites.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think just keeping up with those on environmental issues would make a difference as well. So if someone hears about legislation that they're not supportive of, what can they do in terms of getting in touch with their members of Congress? How can they go about responding to that?
Mm-hmm. So at Indivisible KC, we follow the guidelines that were set out in the Indivisible Guide, and they kind of lay out four really effective ways to influence policy at the federal level. The most effective are town halls, where your member of Congress actually holds a public meeting to talk to their constituents. Mm-hmm. And if you show up at that, and especially if you bring a personal story about how a piece of legislation affects you or someone in your family, and you tell that story, you have a really good chance to directly connect with your member of Congress and influence their position. And those stories, they don't have to be sob stories. I've talked to people who have taken groups of teenagers to talk to their members of Congress about climate change. And their main point is, look, I'm a freshman in high school. I'm 14 years old. The policies that you're putting in place, I'm going to have to live with for decades. Mm-hmm. And I have to inherit this planet when you're done with it. And I need you to take care of it. Mm-hmm. So you can tell a story like that that tells how something impacts you and why it's important to you as their constituent. Another way to impact this is to find public events. So if your member of Congress is doing a ribbon cutting, dedicating a bridge, or going to a local festival or a state fair or something like that, find them. Mm-hmm. Go up and talk to them. Insist on your right to be heard. Remember, anytime you see them, they work for you, and they need to hear from their constituents. There's no way that they can do their job of representing you, of being your voice in Washington, if they're not talking to you.
Some people, though, are afraid to approach mm-hmm. a legislator. They feel like they're not worthy of talking to their legislator face-to-face. What would you say to the person who's worried mm-hmm. about that?
You know, it can be a little bit intimidating the first time, for sure. But again, they're just people. They're just like you and me. And it is their job to represent us in Congress. And so when you go up and talk to them, that is helping them to do their job. They may not always appreciate it, but they need to hear from the people that they represent. They need to hear how the policies that they are implementing impact real people. It's very easy to live in Washington, D.C. most of the year and be surrounded by, I don't know a great way to put it, but, you know, the coastal elite, the mm-hmm. the Beltway bunch, mm-hmm. and to forget about what's really going on back home. So when they're back home, they need to hear from you to know exactly how what they're doing is impacting you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the kind of more practical answer to that is, what are they going to do? They'll mm-hmm. either, they'll talk to you, or they'll run away. Mm-hmm. And either of those can be a win. If they run away from you, mm-hmm. take a video of it. If they try to dodge you and walk out the back door or mm-hmm. walk away from you, take a video of you, because we've all got smartphones in our pockets. We've all got a camera on us at all times. Take a video of yourself trying to engage with them and share it with a group like Indivisible KC, who can help amplify your message about that. Mm-hmm. Because it is their job to engage with you. And if they don't, their constituents need to know that they're not doing their job.
Mm-hmm. So we can actually get out there and be sort of eyes and ears for other people around us.
Exactly. And remember that every time you go up and talk to them, you're not just talking for yourself. You're talking for hundreds of other constituents that want to share a message with them, but maybe haven't had the opportunity to. Mm-hmm. So those two are kind of the most effective ways, the town halls and the public events. But you can also make phone calls. Mm-hmm. And it's great to coordinate those calls with a large group, because mm-hmm. the most impact that you're going to have is when they get 50 calls on one focused issue. Mm-hmm. So if a group like Indivisible KC is putting out a call to action, or the Sierra Club or the ACLU, mm-hmm. when you get a bunch of people calling on that, or it can just be you and a group of your friends, let's mm-hmm. all call about this issue that we care about today. Mm-hmm. When they get several phone calls on the same thing, it's going to make them stop and think, oh, wait, my constituents really care about this. I need to take a position on it, and I need to respond to it. Mm-hmm. So town halls and public events are a great, great way to make an impact, and so are calling. One other thing that you can do is to make an office visit. So if you're not able to track your member of Congress down at a town hall or at a state fair, you can always find their staff in their local office. most members of Congress have multiple offices in their district or their state. So, for example, Roy Blunt has an office in downtown Kansas City, and I've led groups there to talk about different issues each week, whatever is going on. So when you find out, for example, that the AHCA is being voted on this week, then that's a great time to make a visit to your local member of Congress and tell them, I need you to oppose this bill. It's going to hurt me. And to take a group of your friends, it can be a group of four or five people. It could be a group of 100 people. And you show up and you share the message that this legislation is going to impact people in their district. And that also makes a huge impact.
What about executive actions? What about, we talked a little bit about the federal level, but what does Indivisible recommend as far as reacting to the executive branch or to a department like the EPA doing something, changing some regulation that's going to have a real negative impact?
Our focus is really to target our members of Congress, the people that are our voice in Washington on whatever issue we're dealing with. So that is kind of the easiest to understand when you have an actual piece of legislation that they're voting on. But there are also, you can talk to them and ask them to issue statements. So they are part of this power structure in Washington. And if enough of them come out against a particular policy, that's going to make it much harder to keep that in place. So, for example, when the Muslim ban executive order had just been issued, we did a visit again to Roy Blunt's office, and we asked him to issue a statement opposing it, because we know that he's a leader in his party and he's a leader in Washington, and if he comes out against this, that it can have an impact. The same thing with the Russia investigation. This was actually one of those rare issues where we kind of saw eye to eye. He issued a public statement of the Russian issue and possible collusion with the Trump administration. And so that's one place where there are things that he can do directly. For example, on the Senate Intelligence Committee, he can actually be a leader in that investigation, but also the public statements that they make can impact these issues. So you can always go and tell them, I disagree with this policy, and I want you as my voice in Washington to be speaking out against this.
Great. Is there anything else you would recommend to people, any other major pieces of advice that Indivisible has given to people regarding ways to engage that might be helpful for people who are concerned about environmental or any other issues that we haven't covered?
So one thing that I'd recommend to everyone is to go on to the website of your representatives, and that at the federal level can be your two senators and your U.S. representative. At the state level, your state senator, your state representative, and sign up for their newsletters. They're going to put out weekly or monthly summaries of the issues that they're working on, the things that they care about. And that'll kind of help you know what they're doing. And if they express a position that you disagree with, it gives you a good chance to let them know that you disagree. It also is one way that they announce some of their events. So you might see that they're having district days in Jefferson City, or that they're going to be, again, at a state fair or something like that, which can give you another opportunity to find them and discuss with them these issues that you really care about. So I think hooking up with organizations that are tracking the work that you do, and then also signing up for alerts to kind of track what your member of Congress is doing. You can take those and put them together. You know what the issue is, you know what your member of Congress is doing, and that'll give you the tools to go out and make your voice heard about what you care about.
Well, thank you, Hillary.
Thank you so much, Connie.
If anyone wants to learn more about Indivisible Kansas City, you can go to www.indivisiblekc.com. This is Connie Mitchell, reporting for KKFI.
Hi, my name is Daniel Karam, and we're discussing socialism versus capitalism. While capitalism has brought forth a whole host of tremendous results, not to say the least of is that we can walk into grocery stores across the nation and buy an apple. This does not happen in every country. However, it does have shortcomings that, if left unchecked and unregulated, will result in devastating destruction that the world and human race has never known. And so, We are endeavoring to bring out the different points of capitalism as compared to the economic system that is known as socialism, with the hope of dispelling some of the myths and prejudice that have grown up around such concepts through the years of political struggle and misinformation, sometimes referred to as propaganda or alternative truth or just outright lies. It is also hoped that some of the rhetoric surrounding the word and idea of socialism can be dispelled. While roads, libraries were and are the results of socialistic practices, cars and books can be looked at as the products of capitalistic results. And so with this, I introduce someone to talk about some of the points of the economic system known as socialism. This is Dennis Galley.
I'm a retired auto worker, and I feel like I learned a lot, you know, from my education. I have a master's degree in economics, but I did a lot of work in industrial plants on purpose because I wanted to intervene. I wanted to find out how the economy works and how to intervene as a socialist. What I've learned, I approach it from a scientific viewpoint because I think the first thing you have to do is understand capitalism the way it works now. And I agree, you know, it's destroying the earth. There's no doubt about it. The environment is being destroyed. The native peoples are being pushed to the edge. I like to think of it as, you know, the continent of Africa is basically sinking in the ocean. One-fourth of humanity is being basically destroyed with AIDS and warfare and child warfare and, you know, greed, you know, just greed, because most nations there have no defense as compared to the European and the American government. So if you look at it scientifically, I think we have to analyze what capitalism is. It's the system of private ownership of the means of production. That's the way Marx defined it. And that system was different from earlier systems like feudalism and classical slavery. His analysis was that it's an unstable system, that it always drives the wage down to the level of subsistence, and that profits tend to accumulate, and then the system breaks. And, then you have a depression, and it goes through these cycles, and that the only remedy for that is for the working class to realize who they are, what they do, that they produce all the products and all the wealth in the nation, and that they should be running it. Basically, we should be running the system instead of the people who make the profits off of our labor.
And it's been a struggle decades and decades and decades, hundreds of years. It took off from the feudal system where there was markets, and really quite a big deal happened with the industrial, like with the invention of the steam engine. So we had railroads, we had steamships, and we had the capacity for factory and migrant people coming in from agriculture to industrial. Yeah, there's quite a history to it. Glad to hear some of your background.
In my retirement, I've had a chance to do that. Instead of working 58 hours a week, I can devote a lot of time to my research. And what I've got interested in is there's two dimensions, the environmental and the feminist part of this. There was an author by the name of Gerda Lerner who wrote about the origins of patriarchy. And in her estimation, you know, it started way back in Babylon and Assyria. And the first thing that humanity learned when they first became so-called civilized, you know, when we had cities and agriculture, you know, fixed agriculture, and we weren't in a strictly subsistence economy. Well, the first thing was the oppression of women. And from that, we learned slavery. And all the ancient civilizations, Hebrew, Greece, Rome, Assyrian, Babylonian, were basically slave societies. And then, according to Marx, this evolved into feudalism. And then feudalism had its own ruling class and working class, and it evolved into capitalism. And so that's what we have today. And it's taken a lot of turns since Marx's time, obviously, we have international, imperial, global, patriarchal capitalism now. And what I have learned is that you have to pay attention to patriarchy, because if you can paraphrase Marx, he was a scientist. He said, look at the facts on the ground. If money rules, well, then that's capitalism. That's the way it works. And you also have to look at reproduction, not just production, but you have to look at reproduction. Look at the way sexuality and the way men and women relate to each other. Look at the way that works. And if you do, you find that patriarchy is really older than all the economic systems. And it's like an overarching, it's like a wheel within a wheel. You know, these economic systems run dialectically, one after the other, one being overthrown after the other, but always within patriarchy and within a masculinist ruling class.
The one thought that comes to mind has to do with Stalin. I read this book called The Gulag Archipelago by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. He spent 10 years in the prison system, starting in about 1940s to about 1951. And I like the guy's writing. He was a captain, artillery. He was about one of the few things that was effective against the Nazis back in World War II. But he wrote a letter, and the letter was intercepted. And there was a criticism of Stalin in that letter. And because of that, they arrested him, even though they were doing good. He was doing good. It was effective fighting. But they arrested him, put him in this system, and he wrote three volumes. And, you know, they're big volumes, called The Gulag Archipelago. And it was an eye-opener. And Stalin was not a communist. He was a criminal.
Well, Stalin was probably the only one who believed that the Soviet Union had achieved socialism. There was a revolution, you know, in 1917, and we came to power. You know, when I say we, I mean the working people. We came to power, basically. But I think we have to understand what happened. You know, we have to try to understand what happened with the Soviet Union. Stalin was a Bolshevik, and as well as Lenin and Trotsky. And I used to be a Trotskyist. But I always tell people that, you know, if somebody says, wasn't Stalin a bad man? Well, he was a very bad man. But yeah. My goodness, how could one man, you know, get over? He killed all the good Bolsheviks. Mm. How did he do that? How is that? There must be something wrong with the theory, you know, the ideology behind it, and the power structure behind the Bolshevik Party to allow him to get over on everybody, basically. And I always say, you know, Stalinism is nothing but the lack of feminism. That's all. It was never a part of, even if we go back to Marx. He told Engels, his intellectual partner, to go write this book on private property, the family, and the state. And this is always held up, if you're a socialist, it's always kind of held up to you as, go read that book. You're worried about women? Okay, go read that book. And if you read it, you discover that it was indeed the book that Marx would have written had he had time himself to write the book. But it basically says that everything with regard to the power relationship of man and woman and the lower status of woman is due to private property and the means of production. In other words, it has no independent dialectic. It has no independent force of its own. It's not material. And Marx is above all a materialist. And that's what makes him a great scientist, really. But he failed to realize what the dialectic of sex is. What is the dialectic of the patriarchal system, which overarches the economic systems that we've had?
I'd like to just read a little something I wrote. I do some writing, and it deals with this type of subject. I call this Profit is the Enemy. Profit is the enemy. It's costing us our planet with climate change. It's costing us our peace with perpetual war. It's costing us species of the earth as more and more are driven to extinction with each passing year. And it's going to cost our very way of life. Is it a wonder why some people see suicide bombs as a viable future? Is it a wonder why hundreds hoarded wealth in the form of millions of dollars of resources and products can be seen on shelves in buildings called stores across many nations, while the majority of the planet lives on less than $10 or $3 a day, all in the name of profit? And this is our idea of success. That's a question. What's the alternative? Will we as a culture put people as our purpose? What am I going to work and fight and live for? People or profit? Seems simple, but maybe not for blind corporations.
Right on. Profit is the enemy.
Well, unrestrained profit, where you put profit, I mean, it's okay to make a living, to prosper. I think prosper is a healthy thing. But this idea of I've got to raise these prices, I've got to cut these wages in order to compete and overcome and take over that other business or corporation that's in my way. That type of thinking is what,
When you talk about the why do you need so much, I'm just wondering, is it all greed? Is it greed or is there something else, that a capitalist has to have, be excessively mean, be excessively violent, and accumulate endlessly? Isn't there something else? And isn't it masculinism too? Isn't that part of it?
But when you have somebody who has exorbitant wealth, using his wealth to exploit those who are struggling to pay their bills and feed their families and put shoes on their children's feet and medical bills, then you get into something that, in my estimation, is an imbalance. What is the cause of dis-ease but imbalance? And what's the function of government? I think government is supposed to bring about balances.
Well, there's their government and our government. My government is Social Security and good schools and the right to organize and the ruling class's government is warfare and the police and keeping down the people that are at the bottom. So I mean, government has many functions, but I think we have to fight for our version of the government. We can go for reforms. We can try to stop police brutality, and there's important reforms that we can push for. But their government is not the same as our government. They're two different things in my book, and we have to wrest control away from these people in order to emphasize nurturing and education, and we don't need all that competition.
Well, Dennis, I'm so glad that you came in and told us some of your background and expressed your ideas.
Well, I enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks for tuning into this special one-hour broadcast of Radioactive Magazine on the Thursday night special. And special thanks to Brooke Palmer, Connie Mitchell, and Daniel Kamer, who did their maiden voyage tonight as producers of Radioactive Magazine. Good job, all three of you. And on the next regularly scheduled Radioactive Magazine, next Tuesday at 6 p.m., Amrita Burdick talks about the skyrocketing water rates and the deteriorating infrastructure, especially in the most vulnerable parts of our city. That's Radioactive Magazine next Tuesday at 6 p.m. Thanks for tuning in.